Welcome to the Cyber Podcast. My name is Christoph Limpler, and today's guest is Kevin Christ. Now, Kevin is a repeat guest, and we have had him on the show a couple of times in the past to talk about what it means to be a CIO and what you can do early on in your career to set yourself up for this type of leadership position. So if you haven't listened to those prior two episodes, I highly recommend that you do that because this episode is the third and the last in our CIO series. So in this episode, we continue that conversation, but this time we answer the question of what can I do in my mid-career to join the CIO ranks? Now, I already introduced Kevin in our prior episodes, so I won't do that again, but Kevin has a tremendous amount of experience working with CIOs and as CIO. So this is going to be directly actionable information, and I'm very excited to get started. So Kevin, welcome back to the Cyber Podcast, and thank you so much for being here again.
Christoph, it's good to be back. Thanks.
You know, I'm thrilled that you agreed to do a three-part series because, frankly, I just enjoy talking with you. And these podcast episodes don't even really feel like I'm recording an episode. They just feel like a friendly chat. So really excited to have you back, but also a little bit sad since it is coming to an end with the third and last episode in our series, although I'm sure we'll come up with some other creative ideas and things to create content on in the future. So I'm not too worried about it yet.
You're always welcome to give me a call. This doesn't have to be the end.
Perfect. You know, for this episode, we're going to assume that the listener is already mid-career. And Kevin, if somebody is mid-career and they come up to you and they ask, how do I become the future CIO of my organization? What do you tell them?
One of the things that crosses my mind when I hear a question like that is the odds are not that great that they will become the CIO of their organization. And if they have not been told that they're next up or the second one up in a strong succession plan, then you have to look at just the metrics of your opportunity. IT organizations tend to be fairly broad pyramids. A CIO may have, 5 to 8 direct reports. And if you're a level down below that, then the pyramid grows. And so if you just say, if I'm surrounded by, high quality, competent peers, my odds are, 20% or less of becoming the CIO of my organization. And it causes one to think that perhaps I need to look on the outside. There's a couple of examples. I know when Tom Farrow was at Dr. Pepper Snapple, he had 6 direct reports that he was grooming every one of them to potentially be his replacement. And, each of them could legitimately have been the next CIO. Well, the good news is you've really been groomed. The bad news is you're in a tough field. When Barbara Carlini was at Dean Foods before she retired, she had a very similar philosophy. She recruited a stable of leaders that any one of them could run the organization, had an incredible high-performance leadership team. But the odds of you being next behind Barbara were limited by the fact that you were surrounded by great talent that was very equally mature in their careers.
So it's great to be surrounded by such high quality leadership, but at the same time, it makes your odds significantly harder to be able to snatch that position.
Exactly. I mean, you need that leadership around you. If you're the great applications person and the infrastructure is failing, how do you get things done? If you're the great infrastructure person and the security is failing, then you're going to fail as well, or you're going to be severely impaired. So you want that high performance team. And it doesn't mean you're not going to become a CIO. It just means that the odds of you being the next CIO in your organization are more limited. In fact, SIM does an annual IT trend study. And last year in their study of over 1,000 organizations, they noted that almost 80% of CIOs had come from outside of their current organizations. And that was up from 60% only 10 years ago. It was kind of a steady trend line as they asked the same question annually.
Why do you think that is? I mean, doesn't it typically make more sense to have somebody from within the organization that's already intimately familiar with how the organization runs, what's needed, et cetera? Why would they not pick from that versus looking outside of the organization?
That is the $64 million question. I think when you look at the trade-offs, sometimes the CIO role is placed by the leadership above them, or is often selected by that. So if your CIO has rotated, CEO or your CFO has rotated, they may have somebody in mind that they want to bring with them. And I think sometimes you see leadership teams moving together. That's a piece of it. If your CIO has moved on voluntarily, maybe that replacement is in-house. If your CIO has been asked to move on, then perhaps the leadership team doesn't feel like the right skills are inside the organization. They're looking for a different playbook or a different set of skills to come in and change what's happening, or make a kind of a hockey stick adjustment versus continue the present. And I think there's this human dynamic as well, that giving someone the chance to step up to the next level is a greater leap of faith than finding someone who's already performed at that level. And I think there's a bit of having to break through to that first opportunity, that if they think of you as, you know, a director reporting to the CIO, you're not necessarily thought of as the next CIO. Mm-hmm. They haven't seen you in that role. And there's almost this bias that you have to break through if you haven't created those perceptions all along and you're not already on the succession plan.
The $64 million question, that's a highly specific number. Is that just a default number, or does that come from somewhere?
That's an old game show from probably the 60s. I never saw it, but I always heard the phrase.
I gotcha. Yeah, I don't watch much TV, so that makes sense mm-hmm. as to why I wouldn't know it. So if that's the case, right, that sounds like a grim outlook where it's very hard or / impossible to become the future CIO of your organization, unless you're able to break through that bias or unless stars align in a way. So what is your recommendation if that's the case and somebody's listening to this and they're trying to become the next CIO of their organization, they're hearing what you're saying, what do you tell them next, right? We can't just end the episode there, right?
Sure.
what do we tell them next?
I think if your goal is to make it in your organization, that you need to have good career conversations with your leadership, the existing CIO, and if that CIO is supportive, other executives, how they see you, where they see you're going. And ideally, your CIO is your coach and really helps position you, put you in positions where you can be highlighted, where they can see the rest of your attributes, rotates you around the organization a bit so that you really understand the whole job. And you really need to be kind of groomed and coached to be on the radar screen when the opportunity does arise. At the same time, I think if your goal is to become a CIO, you need to be very open to the possibility that your first CIO position very likely will be in any organization except the one that you're in. And you need to think about those external opportunities and how to position yourself for those.
I was going to say, if that report comes out and says that almost 80% of CIOs come from outside of the organization, then does that mean your odds of filling in that position increase as you look towards outside organizations?
Well, yes. I mean, if you just think about the numbers, I mean, in any given organization, there's one CIO, or there might be a CIO and a CTO, but very, very limited number of slots, you know, 1 to 3. And if you say, I'm going outside, there's a slot in every organization. And that's still a very limited number of slots. But, you know, you have 100 or 150 opportunities instead of one. And so your odds go up. And each of those organizations, you have to be there, obviously, when there's a transition. If your CIO is well established and isn't going anywhere for 10 years, you're not going to become a CIO in your organization. But there'll be lots of openings if you broaden your aperture. And certainly if you're willing to look geographically beyond your own locality, then again, you know, your 100, you know, 150 opportunities become thousands of opportunities.
So in that case, how do you recommend people approach the situation of finding those external opportunities? Like What are some things they can do to increase their likelihood of finding that opportunity in external organizations?
I think you have to think about what is the criteria where you would thrive as a CIO. What is the story that you bring that in the kind of organization where you would do best? Is it a large organization or small organization? Are you an industry specialist or industry agnostic? And you know, one industry, for example, that I find to be relatively closed is healthcare. You are either a healthcare technology professional or you are not. But often the healthcare industry does not view expertise coming from or experience coming from, you know, retail or manufacturing or other industries is even relevant in their world. And so your opportunity as an aspiring healthcare CIO might be, you know, other healthcare organizations, but that might be an area you don't break in. So look at what you bring industry-wise. Again, there's different types of CIOs. There are those that are primarily strategic transformation of the business. There are those that are very focused on reducing cost and really kind of minimizing the tax on the business for technology and different skill sets. So know what strengths you bring and look for organizations that match with what you bring. I would say you need to be very open-minded and willing to look at organizations that are smaller or not as advanced as yours. And, you know, one example, a good friend of mine, Neelu Sethi, is the CIO at ReadyIce. She had many, many years at Dr. Pepper Snapple and did very well in that organization, multi-billion dollar enterprise. ReadyIce, less than $500 million, and she stepped up to the CIO level. And what did ReadyIce see in her? She brought all of those big company disciplines. She knew what good practice was. She knew how to take technologies to the cloud. She knew how to bring projects in on time. She knew organized, disciplined IT operations. And so as she stepped into the ReadyIce organization, they needed all of that. So she didn't move. It wasn't a lateral move organizationally, but she has been incredibly impactful and has received a number of CIO recognitions from that effort. So be willing to step down and bring an organization up with you, with your knowledge and in the resources you bring with you. Be willing to take a step backwards on the process maturity curve. If everything's running smoothly, you know, they might not need a high-powered CIO to change things. But if things are a little rough in some areas and you've got a tick list of things to address walking in the door, then you could be very well embraced as a CIO.
That's a really good point, because looking at organizations in different sizes like that, especially if you come from a size up where you're looking at organizations that are slightly smaller, I say slightly, it's all relative, that are smaller than where you currently are, where you have experience, you might be able to come in and inject some of those best practices at the right time, when they need it the most, because the organization that we're, you know, the smaller organization might be needing that outside perspective that they just don't have with their current team. And that's okay. They've just grown so quickly that they need to inject some talent that knows what's coming around the corner, whereas the rest of the team doesn't know what that is. And so as a result of that, that can provide opportunities that you wouldn't have in other organizations where it would be more of a lateral movement like that. And so that's definitely, I think, an important point to keep in mind. But at the same time, not everybody can do that, right? I've definitely seen some people that can't go from small organizations to large organizations and vice versa. So that can be a struggle for certain individuals, but that may not be something that they know is going to be a struggle for them unless they try it out. And maybe they fall into that position naturally and it's a great fit for them and they're able to take on responsibilities that maybe they wouldn't have at a larger organization. So it's definitely an important point to keep in mind and something that I think can help a lot of people.
Yeah, you have
out.
To know yourself and you have to know your strengths, and you have to scale down the practices or scale up the practices that you bring. If you're coming from a very large organization, you may send something to the PMO function, and that may be a group of, you know, a dozen people. In a small organization, the PMO may be Frank on Thursday and Susie on Friday, and that's it. And so you don't always have the depth of functional capabilities, and so you have to scale your practices to what works and not bog it down with big company discipline as well. You can lift it up, but you can also bog it down.
So beyond that, what else can somebody do to stand out when that CIO opportunity arises? And I heard you mention writing the right story. Mm-hmm. What do you mean by that?
Well, there are a number of things that you can do to write the right story. We talked in the prior episode about the need for business knowledge and understanding. And in that episode, we talked about it starting, you know, early in your career. As you get to mid-career, it's even that much more important. And you go back and listen to that episode on how to do some of those things. But you have to be able to understand and articulate the business impact of technology, not just the technical details. When you are interviewing for a CIO job, they don't want to hear that you installed Okta for single sign-on and that you installed Microsoft suite in the cloud or SAP or whatever. They want to hear about the business impact and outcomes and results that came from the technology that you installed and implemented and institutionalized. And, you know, for example, I worked for a large part of 2019 on a major Oracle cloud implementation. I had a QA role over a systems integrator and a cloud services provider. And my conversations with the board were all about, are we going to be able to get invoices out more effectively and more accurately? Are we going to have higher collections? Are we going to be able to give customers quotes sooner? Are we going to be able to close the books more quickly and more accurately and have, almost real-time financial information to manage by versus waiting, 2 to 4 weeks? And so those are the conversations about the technology and why we're doing it that you have to be able to have as a CIO, not just we met the timeline and the budget and installed the technology and converted all the data. That's expected. But the CIO, as part of the executive team, has to understand why we're doing it and make sure we stay focused on the parts of the implementation that realize real business benefits. And so that's part of the right story. We talked in the prior episode, I think, as well about rotating through different parts of the technology function, applications, operations, yes, infrastructure, security, project management, vendor management. And so if you haven't done that by mid-career, you need to seek those opportunities to understand the whole technology function, because as CIO, you're going to own it all. And you're not going to be the deepest expert in all those things, but you can't have some incredible blind spot where you don't understand the impact of operations on IT. You know, if email or phones are down, you know, you really don't have a license to go do the next big project. The business is suffering today. So you need to understand what good operations are and how to make sure that's happening in your organization.
And one of those key things that you've mentioned in pre-interview notes are understanding the economics of technology. Can you talk a little bit more about what that means and why that's so
important? Yeah, technology economics change dramatically. And, you know, for years we've talked about Moore's Law, and about every 18 months processor power doubles and the cost is halved. And it's true of storage and processor and network speeds and all sorts of things. And generally those trend lines have held up over history, and we just see faster and faster chips and larger storage and smaller space. But what that means is you need to understand the cost of technology today versus when you looked at a project 3 or 4 years ago, and also look at where it's going. And you need to be able to figure out, okay, what is the real cost capability? And no matter what, you know, my budget, if I've got a $20 million IT budget, that was great, 2 years ago, but I can do the same thing for $15 million and free up $5 million to go pursue new things. And so I need to understand the current cost trends in economics. I need to understand the various sourcing options that change my economics. And you've seen this mix of not only in-house resources. And when I started my career, it was all about how many people do you have in your IT department, but it's how do you leverage offshore capabilities that may be your own captive group or maybe a third party. How do you leverage the cloud versus having things in your own data center? What's the best economic opportunity today? And cloud, for example, one of the big benefits, two of the big benefits. One is I can implement a new technology without spending millions of dollars buying a new platform, because I'm going to pay for it by the month as a service. And the other thing is I can scale it up and down, often with a phone call, depending on my contract, or with a couple hours notice. So if I'm a retailer and my business quadruples from October to December, I can scale up my platform to get through busy season, and then I can scale it back down and not absorb all of that cost. As the CIO, you're responsible for the IT budget and the IT spend, and you need to understand how to optimize that investment on behalf of the business.
So this is something that I've thought about at length, and seeing the pre-interview notes kind of jogged my memory on it. And so I was thinking a little bit more about it before we started recording this episode, which is that you know, when you're having to make some of these decisions that have to do with choosing technologies or choosing a strategy and how to implement it, and you may not be the person that knows all of those different aspects of it. So you may not realize that technology has gotten cheaper. You may not realize that some technology came out in the last year or two that's a far more efficient way of implementing what you're trying to implement because you have experience with a different technology or you remember different prices, whatever it is. And I used to see that as a big problem because other people would come in these meetings and they would know about these new technologies. They would know about these new features or price drops. And I'm like, how do you know this, right? I need to be better about knowing these things. But then I came to realize that it's impossible to know all those different factors. And we've even talked about this a little bit in the prior episode. Instead, the best way is to surround yourself with people who do know, who are able to provide that information so that you can make those better decisions. And I think that's a critical piece. And you've mentioned this as well numerous times, but you have to build relationships. You have to build networks so that when you're ready for those positions or you're put into those positions, you can bring those people to the table and you can work with them and they can help you make better decisions. So moving on to talking about building those relationships and those networks, I know some people are a lot better at it than other people are. So for the people who are not very good at doing that, what would be some recommendations you have for them to start building those relationships or better relationships and stronger networks, especially when they're mid-career, especially when it becomes so
sure.
critical?
Christoph, there's a couple things on that external network that are important. I think that the first thing that you just mentioned, the new ideas, you need a network of your peers and other organizations, of listening to various product vendors, of listening to various consultants who bring you new ideas. You don't have to discover all of these breakthroughs on your own. You have to be a very good listener and an active listener and cut through what's real versus what's hype. And there's always a lot of hype around new technologies. So that's one place where your external network can really help you. But in terms of how do you build that network, I'm approached by so many mid-career IT executives who are looking to make a move or who are displaced for whatever reason. And they've been in the same organization for 15 or 20 years. And their entire investment of network has been being known inside of the company. It's, you know, how can I be known all across my major organization? And that served them well in their career until they go to move on. And then they realize they don't know anybody. Mm-hmm. And so to me, the answer is be involved in some professional organizations of your peers. And it can be, you know, project management organizations. It can be user groups of major technologies. It could be organizations of, you know, like SIM is a group that I'm heavily involved in, or the Alliance of Technology and Women, that brings together leaders from all these different organizations on a monthly basis and really work as a community. There are also many, many conferences, especially if you live in a major market. You know, here in Dallas, I'll bet there's 15 or more technology leadership conferences that roll through town every year. Most of them are free to qualified professionals. And you really have a chance to meet your peers, grow your knowledge as you listen to the various speakers. And the important thing is, you know, walk away from those events and say, my goal is not just to meet people and walk away. Catch some business cards, have coffee with somebody, make a phone call and just follow up and start to build a relationship so that, you know, you do have people you can learn from. And you may be learning about new technologies. You may be learning about, hey, has anybody dealt with provider XYZ before? And have they served you well? Or are there things I should be worried about? But you are so much stronger and more capable if you have that network. Along those lines, you need to build your own visibility. If you want to become a CIO in another organization, somebody's got to know you're out there. And so through some of these opportunities, maybe you can speak at some of these conferences. Maybe you can speak at some of these professional organizations. You certainly have the opportunity to write in. So many people, you know, self-publish on LinkedIn or run their own blogs or what have you. And you know, grow your visibility intentionally. And it's not fun. It takes an investment of time. I mean, honestly, this conversation between you and I'm growing my visibility by getting my message out through cyber. And it helps people find mm-hmm. me that want to have conversations about some of the things that I do. So I think it's a matter of being intentional and having a plan to say, I'm going to get outside of my comfort zone, my current shell, and it's going to take time away from, you know, my personal life or my family. It's got to be on top of work, but it's important to managing my long-term career goals.
It's so important. And I think one of the things you mentioned is absolutely key, which is that people need to know you exist, because the thing is, you could be the best fit for that position, but nobody knows you exist. Therefore, you're not going to get that position. And so it's a disservice to you, because you could have been able to move into that position and fill it, but it's also a disservice to the organization, because they weren't able to fill that seat with potentially the best person. And so that's also something that I try to think about all the time, because a lot of people reach out to me and they say, look, I've entered this field, especially in cybersecurity. I've entered cybersecurity. I'm looking for a mentor, and I don't really know anybody in this industry that would be able to mentor me for what I'm looking to do. Can you help me find those mentors? And I actually asked you that question, I think many months ago, because it is a question that I get all the time. And there's only so many ways that I can think of answering it. And there are different tactics that you can employ to try and find mentors that way. I think one of the ones that you mentioned that I don't think we've mentioned yet is going through LinkedIn and pulling up mutual connections. Right, looking for people in certain positions, in this example, maybe CIOs, that have mutual connections with you, where you have a strong relationship with that mutual connection. You can even reach out to them and say, hey, look, I saw you're connected with XYZ person, and could we grab a coffee? I'd love to explain what I've been up to the last few months. I'm trying to transition to this career, et cetera, and go from there. So there's so many different ways of thinking outside the box and trying to make those connections. It's just keep going at it, keep trying it. You'll find something that works. And, you know, you never know, maybe one day you'll wake up and you'll have that connection that's been created, and that will completely change your life in a way.
Yeah, for me, you know, it would never be my first phone call. I wouldn't, you know, meet somebody for the first time and say, hey, you know, I really respect you. Will you be my mentor? That's a little bit too forward, but I really would like to follow up and have a conversation with you. And you talk about some things. And if it goes well, you know, after one or two conversations, you might say, I'd really like to continue this on a regular basis. Would you consider, you know, mentoring me? And people are flattered by that request. And, you know, the challenge is, you know, do they have the time to put into it? And, you know, I can mentor three or four people personally, but if I'm mentoring 10, I'm mentoring none. And so, you know, you have to be willing to let them take you on if they really have the time and the interest. And if they don't display the time and the interest, you probably won't get a lot of value out of that one, and you need to find a different relationship to work on.
So as we start to wrap up the episode, I'd love to end on this philosophical question that you brought forward and that you asked in the pre-interview, which is, know what kind of CIO you want to become. Can you explain a little bit more of what you mean by that?
Sure. I think the CIO job is so different in different organizations. And is it a staff of 1,000 or a staff of 15? Is it an organization that's trying to fundamentally, you know, change their business model using technology to leverage it? Or an organization that's looking more at incremental changes in stability? And you likely have a stronger skill set in one area than another. So oftentimes when a company is looking for a new CIO, it's like, I need somebody who's a security guru. Our board is terrified about a breach. We're in an industry that's often targeted. I need a very security-centric lockdown CIO. Well, maybe you're that person, maybe you're not. But if you're not, don't try and shoehorn yourself into that opportunity. You're not the right person. Mm-hmm. If somebody is primarily the stabilizing, you know, caretaker, cost takeout, I'm gonna optimize the technologies. There are organizations that are definitely looking for that. Our costs are out of control, and we need to rein them back in. But you may not be the transformational person. If you've never done transformation, and almost everybody I know is drawn to that. That's the exciting, sexy stuff. I'm gonna change the world. I'm gonna change my industry. I'm gonna change my business. If that's not in your story of experiences, if when you're telling your story, you can't point to examples of where you've done that, you're probably not gonna get hired as the CIO to go drive that for the next organization. That's probably not where you get to cut your teeth. And so, you know, look hard in the mirror and say, what is the organization that would embrace me and say, you're just what we need? And if what your story is to date is not the CIO you want to become, then figure out how to pick up those other skills and experiences and stories so that you have the right story when the opportunities arise for the kind of CIO you'd really like to be.
And you've mentioned a Girth book before. Is that a book that's helped you figure out what CIO
Yeah, actually,
you
it's Tony Girth is a professor at University of North Texas, and he and Joe Papard from MIT wrote an excellent book last year called Taking the Reins as CIO. And so what I found it to be is an excellent reference in terms of how to step into that first CIO job, the organizational dynamics, the you know, how to be politically aware, not how to be political, but politically aware, how to engage across the organization with business leadership. It is not a technology book at all. It is a leadership book for someone in the technology role. But one of the areas in that book does talk about the different types of CIOs and the different archetypes and you know, how you might be perceived and what you might be seeking.
Kevin, thank you so much for taking the time to do this three-part series. I've learned so much from each and every single episode that, you know, even if we weren't doing this for an audience, I would have thoroughly enjoyed doing it just because I've learned so much from it. But I'm also sure that listeners have been able to take away a lot of actionable advice. And so if they have and they want to thank you for it, or they want to connect with you and follow
Christoph,
up.
Christoph, they can always find me on LinkedIn, Kevin Crist, and I'm with Concentre. They can also reach out to me via email, kevin.crist, C-H-R-I-S-T, at concentre.net, C-O-N-C-E-N-T-R-E.net. And Christoph, I just want to say, you know, I've enjoyed these conversations as well. I enjoy your interviewing style. And I was not aware of cyber before we connected, and I've listened to several of your podcasts, and I see the value that you're bringing to a lot of developing professionals, and really appreciate the opportunity to share my story.
You know what? I didn't even think about it until you just mentioned that, which is hilarious. And that is, we didn't know each other until a few months ago, and we met through a mutual connection. And so that is by itself highlights the importance of being able to lean on your network and saying, look, here's something that I'm working on. I'm looking for this type of talent to interview on our cyber podcast. Do you know anybody who fits the bill? And then we got introduced from Tom Sweet, I believe. And Tom Sweet said, yeah, I know Kevin. Chris is a fantastic guy. He can give you a lot of guidance, especially in terms of CIOs and understanding what it takes to become that. And here we are today, three episodes in. I feel like we've built a great connection in the process. I've learned a tremendous amount from you. And so that's just such a great example of the power of network and relationships. So
a great way to end the episode. I think probably 75% of the opportunities I've had in life is because somebody else opened the door for me and said, hey, you've got to meet Kevin for whatever. And things I would never have found on my own. And so, and of course, I look out for others the same way. This is a team sport, and we all win when we're all looking out for each other.
Kevin, thank you. Everybody listening and tuning into these episodes, thank you for listening. I really appreciate it. If you're not already subscribed, you can subscribe to the Cyber Podcast on your favorite podcast streamer or by going to anchor.fm/cyber. And definitely just reach out to Kevin. Take 5 minutes or even less than that, really, to send him an email or send him a connection request and thank him. Thank him for his time and thank him for sharing his expertise. Thanks, everybody, for listening, and I'll see you next time.